crazy pitches that turn prospects off, and say things like, "I would love to have a few minutes of your time to tell you about my company." Messages like this add no value and generate instant resistance because subconsciously the prospect hears, "I would love to come by your office and waste an hour of your life talking about me, my products, and my wants. Won't it be awesome for you to spend your valuable time listening to my pitch?" Salespeople are making egregious messaging mistakes on the phone, in person, via email, and social media because they don't realize that prospects are not going to give up their time for a product and services features dump, an enthusiastic pitch about their company being number one this or biggest of that, regurgitated list of generic facts and figures, marketing brochures, information that is not relevant, or any of the other mindless crap that spews from the mouths and keyboards of salespeople. No one wants to be pitched. You hate it, I hate it, and prospects hate it. Pitching leaves prospects feeling that you don't listen, and it makes them feel unimportant. This is the primary reason you face so much resistance getting prospects to give up their time. Prospects resent you interrupting their day to tell them about how you're going to waste more of their time talking about you and your generic kitchen sink data dumps. They would rather get a root canal than spend an hour listening to a mouthy salesperson. Prospects meet with you for their reasons, not yours. So you must articulate the value of spending time with you in the context of what is most important to them. Your message must demonstrate a sincere interest in listening to them, learning about them, and solving their unique problems. This is how you break down initial resistance so that you earn an appointment, gain the opportunity to gather information, or engage in a sales conversation right in the moment. What I want to make clear is prospecting messages are not complex. Be careful not to overcomplicate things. Your prospecting message is designed for one purpose, to quickly persuade your prospect to give you their time. What you say and how you say it. In most prospecting interactions, you have mere seconds to get your prospect's attention. In those precious few moments, message matters. What you say, the words you use, and how you say it, nonverbal cues, are critical to your success. I've spent most of my life around horses. Horses have an innate ability to sense fear, and they will take advantage of riders the moment they sense that the person is afraid or lacks confidence. Horses have a 5-to-1 weight and size advantage over the average person. If the horse doesn't believe that you are in charge, it can and will dump you. Prospects are no different. If they sense fear, weakness, and lack of confidence, they will shut you down or bulldoze right over you. Delivery matters. Fanatical prospectors exude confidence, which is why they are so successful at opening doors that others believed were nailed shut. One of the truths about human behavior is people tend to respond in kind. If you are relaxed and confident, you'll transfer that emotion to your prospect. If you want prospects to be enthusiastic about meeting you, be enthusiastic about meeting them. A relaxed, confident, enthusiastic demeanor and tone will open doors when nothing else will. Nonverbal communication includes voice tone, inflection, pitch, and speed. Body language, facial expressions, the way you dress and your outward appearance, sentence structure, grammar, punctuation, and the words used in written communication through email, text messaging, and social messaging. Enthusiasm and confidence. Confidence and enthusiasm are the two most powerful and persuasive nonverbal messages you send to prospects. A simple definition of confidence is a feeling or belief that you can do something well or succeed at something. Enthusiasm is defined as a strong excitement about something, something inspiring zeal or fervor. Being enthusiastic and feeling confident in the face of rejection can be very difficult. This is why it makes sense to develop techniques for building and demonstrating confidence and enthusiasm even when you don't feel confident and enthusiastic. This begins with developing your mindset and mental toughness to allow you to regain focus and bounce back from rejection and fatigue. Even the best of us, those who have experience and success, struggle with enthusiasm and confidence from time to time. Studies on human behavior from virtually every corner of the academic world have proven time and again that we can change how we feel by changing our facial expressions, the words we use, our self-talk, and our physical posture. In other words, what is happening on the inside of you manifests itself in your outward confidence and enthusiasm. This is not just a psychological response. It's also physiological. Studies are coming in from across academia that the hormones cortisol and testosterone play a significant role in confidence. Work by researchers, including Harvard University's Amy Cuddy, revealed that your posture and body language can shape your emotions, including enthusiasm and confidence. Cuddy's research demonstrates that power posing, physically standing in a posture of confidence even when you don't feel confident, impacts testosterone and cortisol levels in the brain, and that influences confidence. This isn't something new, though. Thought leaders, self-help experts, teachers, and moms with "sit up straight and you'll feel better" or "keep your head up" have been giving us the same advice for years. Most inside sales trainers teach salespeople that putting a smile on their face will transfer that smile to their voice. Some trainers even suggest that you should put a mirror by the phone when you're prospecting so you'll be aware of your facial expression. We know that when you dress your best, you feel your best. When you put your shoulders up and chin up, you look and feel confident. Tell yourself that you will succeed and your chances of success go up. Use assertive and assumptive words, phrases, and voice tone, and you will be more credible and powerful. And more likely to get a yes when you ask for what you want. Act enthusiastic, think enthusiastic thoughts, and use enthusiastic language, and you will begin to feel enthusiastic and eventually become enthusiastic. Even the simple act of saying, "I'm awesome," when someone asks you how you're doing, can lift your mood and cause you to feel awesome, even if you don't. What you say. Prospecting is primarily designed to quickly engage a prospect and persuade them to give up their time. You don't need to craft elaborate pitches or come up with complicated scripts. In fact, this is where most prospecting goes wrong. You are interrupting your prospect's day. If a salesperson were interrupting your busy day, what would you want? Well, think about it. You'd want them to be quick and get right to the point so you could get back to your day. You'd want them to be clear and transparent about their intentions, in other words, to tell you exactly what they wanted. And you'd want the interruption to be relevant to your situation, problems, or issues. Your prospecting message must be quick, simple, direct, and relevant. The relevant part is the critical element. Prospects are going to agree to give up their valuable time for their reasons, not yours. The lower the risk to them for giving up their time, the more likely they'll be willing to give it up. This is why, for example, it is more difficult to get a yes when requesting an hour-long meeting to do a full demo than when asking for a 15-minute discovery meeting to determine if there is enough interest and reasons to move to the next step. You lower the risk for your prospect by answering with them, the most important question on their mind: what's in it for me? WIIFM. Of course, it is not always possible to know which reason will lower the risk enough for your prospect to say yes to your request. Sometimes you gotta make an educated guess. In his book Smart Calling, Art Sobczak calls these assumptions about WIIFM possible value propositions. He suggests that for each class of prospect and decision maker role, you should take time to define the possible reasons that would create enough WIIFM for them to give up their time to spend it with you. Jill Conrath, author of Snap Selling, says that in our current business environment where potential decision makers are crazy busy, being able to deliver a powerful value proposition is the way to pique curiosity and open doors. Jill defines a value proposition as a clear statement of tangible results a customer gets from using your products or services. It's outcome-focused and stresses the business value of your offering. Conrad suggests that there are three key parts to a winning value proposition. First, it focuses on a business objective that is measured. You'll get their attention when you focus on a metric that impacts their performance. Next, it disrupts the status quo. The status quo is powerful, and people abhor change and will only move from the status quo when they feel they can significantly improve their current situation. They can increase sales, reduce cost, improve efficiency, reduce stress, and so on. And finally, it offers proof or evidence. When you can provide information about how much you have helped other prospects in similar situations, you gain instant credibility. The higher the risk for your prospect to give up time to meet with you, the more powerful and convincing your value prop must be. For example, if you're asking a C-level executive to give up their time, you have to bring a damn good reason for them to do so because their time is incredibly valuable. You'll want to craft a well-laid-out case that is specific and germane to your prospect. For example, I've helped multiple companies in your market segment reduce time to profitability on new product launches by as much as 50%. In fact, Aspen Systems' IDEC SaaS launch was the fastest ramp-up to ROI in the history of the company. With our system, they made a 41% improvement over their last launch. Now, on the flip side, if you work for a well-known brand and are meeting with small business owners who use products like yours, asking for a few minutes to learn more about their business can work like a charm. Why? Well, because small business owners like to talk about themselves, and the risk of taking a few minutes to meet with you is relatively low. For example, you might say, "I'm helping several restaurants in town with significant savings on supplies. I thought we could meet so I can spend time learning about you and your restaurant to see if what we offer might be a fit." I'm a big fan of Mike Weinberg's power statements and sales story development process detailed in his book, New Sales Simplified. Mike does a masterful job of laying out the process for building compelling stories that get your prospects' attention. He says your power statement must answer your prospects' issues, your offerings that address these issues, and competitive differentiators. Weinberg says you need to answer the question, why do my customers choose to do business with me? This is how you define why you are truly different from your competition, not just your company, product, or service, but you. Like Weinberg says, differentiation gets the attention of your prospect. WIIFM, the power of because. According to Robert Cialdini, author of Influence, a well-known principle of human behavior says that when we ask someone to do us a favor, we will be more successful if we provide a reason. People simply like to have reasons for what they do. I don't use the term value proposition very much. Honestly, I don't like the phrase. It sounds complicated. I like simple and straightforward. In prospecting, all you really need to do is give your prospect a good enough reason to meet with you, and they'll say yes. It doesn't need to be perfect, just good enough to get in the door. I'm also realistic. To be efficient at prospecting, you must pack lots of prospecting touches into a short period of time. In most cases, you will be prospecting to a similar group of prospects who share a common set of issues. Stopping to craft a perfect, unique value proposition for each one of these prospects is inefficient and impractical. Instead, you need a compelling message that works most of the time with most of your prospects. It has to be quick, direct, and persuasive, but it cannot sound like a cheesy script. It's got to be natural and authentic. Of course, if you're calling a C-level contact or high-potential prospect, it's critical to craft something specific and relevant that answers their unique "what's in it for me" question. Let's get real, though. For most salespeople, most of the time, you won't be in this situation. You need a message that can be delivered in 10 seconds or less and gives your prospect a reason or a because that's good enough to get them to say yes. In a landmark study on human behavior, psychologist Ellen Langer and her team of researchers from Harvard demonstrated the raw power of because. Langer had her team of researchers cut in line in front of people waiting for access to photocopiers. She discovered that when the researcher politely asked to jump in front of the person waiting for the copier without giving a reason, "Excuse me, I have 5 pages, may I use the copier?" the person would only say yes about 60% of the time. However, when the researcher qualified the request with a valid reason, "Because I'm in a hurry," the person said yes on average 94% of the time. Now, here's where the research became interesting. When the researcher gave a nonsensical reason like, "Excuse me, I have 5 pages, may I use the copier because I have to make copies," the person still said yes 93% of the time. It was a truly stunning finding. Saying the word "because" was more important and powerful than the reason itself. Now, I want to be absolutely clear that I am not advising you to make up nonsense and use that while prospecting. What I am saying is that focusing on a simple, straightforward "because" works, and spending hours agonizing over some complex value prop is unlikely to give you anything more effective in prospecting than a simple, direct "because." For example, just saying, "I'd like 15 minutes of your time because I want to learn more about you and your company," works surprisingly well with many prospects. What we learn from Langer's copy machine study is when we ask people to do something for us, like give up their time, they are more likely to do so when we give them a reason. Bridging to the because. Bridges connect. Bridging solutions to your prospects' problems using their language, not yours, is one of the core disciplines of sales. In the context of the sales process, bridging helps you advance deals through the pipe and close the sale. In the context of prospecting, your bridge is the because that gives your prospect a good enough reason to give up their time to spend it with you. There are two types of bridges you'll use when prospecting: targeted and strategic. Targeted bridges are bridges that are common to a large group of similar prospects. Decision-maker roles, industry verticals, product or service applications, and so on. Targeted bridges are most appropriate when you have little information about a specific prospect and the cost-benefit of doing reams of research is not worth it. For example, if you work in business services and have a prospect database of 10,000 SMBs, taking time to research every prospect before calling them would make no sense. It is a better use of your time to make as many calls as possible to engage and qualify as many prospects as possible in the least amount of time. When you don't have specifics about their problems, issues, or concerns, you'll need to infer problems based on economic trends or your knowledge of what other businesses are experiencing in the same industry, geographical area, or market segment, or even with a certain competitor's product. You'll naturally iterate and refine your message as you engage in more conversations with these prospects. Here's an example. "Hi, Candace. This is Jeb Blunt with Sales Gravy. The reason I'm calling is to schedule an appointment with you to show you our new sales onboarding automation software. Many of my clients are frustrated because it takes too long to get new salespeople ramped up to full productivity and find that it's holding their business growth back. Our software typically cuts onboarding time and costs for new sales reps by 50% and makes it super easy to manage new rep onboarding, giving you the peace of mind that your new hires will start selling fast. I have 2 p.m. on Thursday open. How about we get together for a short meeting so I can learn more about you and see whether it makes sense to schedule a demo?" You'll notice that I implied that Candace is frustrated because it is taking too long to get her new salespeople up to speed in selling. I don't know for sure that this is her issue, but it is a high probability educated guess because most executives experience anxiety when new salespeople aren't selling. Strategic bridges, on the other hand, are unique to a single high-value prospect and specific individual at that prospect. You will typically craft strategic bridges for enterprise-level, conquest prospects, and C-level executives. Strategic bridges require research so that your bridge or because is specific and relevant, reduces risk, and gives them a compelling reason to give you their time. Developing bridges specific to a single prospect is time-consuming and can seriously limit the activity you are able to accomplish in a day, especially if you are doing this during the golden hours. However, if your target prospect database is limited or you are trying to engage a large conquest prospect in your territory, developing a specific bridge is risk-reward positive. In some cases, you may only get one shot at a C-level executive, and you'll want to make it count. To develop a bridge specific to your prospect, you will first need to determine the objective of your prospecting touch. Are you attempting to get more information to further qualify the opportunity, decision-maker role, or buying window? Do you want to set up an initial meeting, or are you seeking an introduction to another person? Defining your objective in advance so you know what you're asking for will help you develop a bridge that gives your prospect a reason to take that step. Next, research your prospect. Set up Google alerts to have information about the company or individual sent directly to your inbox. Review notes and history in your CRM. Research the company, division, or location through online searches, visiting their website, press releases, and company pages on LinkedIn, Google, Twitter, and Facebook. Visit your contact's social media profile pages. Review posts for jargon, core values, PR, awards, trigger events, initiatives, changes, and problems that you can solve. Research industry trends and read the most recent trade articles. Craft your message to demonstrate that you can relate to their specific situation. Bridge to a specific problem they are facing using their language that you glean from your research. Here's an example. Hi, Windsor. This is Jeb Blunt from Sales Gravy. The reason I'm calling is to set an appointment with you. I read in Fast Company that you're adding another 100 sales reps to keep up with growth, and I imagine that it's got to be a bit stressful to bring on that many sales reps and keep them producing. I've worked with a number of companies in your industry to reduce ramp-up time for new reps. At XJAM Software, for example, we cut ramp-up time to ROI for their new reps by 50%. While I don't know if our solution will be a fit in your unique situation, I've got some ideas and best practices I've seen work well for companies like yours and thought you might be interested in learning more about them. How about we get together for a short meeting Thursday at 2 p.m.? The secret to crafting powerful bridges. Frustration, anxiety, stress, fear, peace of mind. What do these words have in common? They describe emotions. Emotional words demonstrate empathy and connect with how your prospect is feeling. The real secret to crafting prospecting messages that convert into meetings, information, or sales is starting with a simple but powerful premise. People make decisions based on emotion first and then justify with logic. This is why pitching logic or features doesn't work. Trust me. Your prospects abhor a pitch. This, by the way, is why you get so much resistance with those long scripts your marketing department writes for you. Prospects want to feel that you get them and their problems, or at least trying to, before they'll agree to give up their time to meet with you. They'll only give up their time because you offer them emotional value, insight value, or tangible value. Emotional value. The easiest way to connect directly with your prospect at the emotional level is by relating to painful emotions like stress, worry, insecurity, distrust, anxiety, fear, frustration, or anger, and offering them peace of mind, security, options, lower stress, less stress, or hope. Insight value. When you offer information that gives your prospect power or leverage over other people, that's insight value. Most prospects worry about maintaining their competitive edge, either as a company or an individual. They're anxious that there may be something in the marketplace that they're not privy to. Unknowns are disconcerting, especially if a competitor has the best practice, information, system, or processes that they don't. Tangible value. Executives and contacts in technical and data-centric roles will value data and case studies. How much, how many, and what results can you deliver, have you delivered, or will you deliver specific to their unique situation? The most effective way to craft the right message is to simply stand in your prospect's shoes. View things through their eyes and use your God-given empathy to sense their emotions and to consider what might be important to them. Consider how you might feel in their situation. Start by answering these questions from your prospect's perspective. What would cause you stress? When do you feel stress? What makes you worry? When do you worry? Why do you worry? What creates anxiety? When do you feel anxiety? How do you feel when you run out of time for important things? How do you feel when you don't have enough money to accomplish your goals? When does this happen? How do you feel when you don't have enough resources to accomplish your goals, and when does this happen? How do you feel when you don't have the knowledge to accomplish your goals, and when does this happen? How do you feel when you fail to accomplish your goals? When do you get overwhelmed, and how does it feel? What impacts your peace of mind or sense of security? How would it feel to have limited options? What is causing you to feel frustrated or stuck? What makes you mad? What causes you to feel distrust? What causes you fear? What causes you anguish? What might you want to know? What unknown would make you worry? What information would you fear getting into your competitor's hands? What might a competitor be doing that would make you want to do it too? What information would you believe might give you a winning edge? What would cause you to be curious? And what might be stealing your time, money, or resources? Take time to analyze your product and service delivery strengths and weaknesses. Review or define your competitive advantages and the value you bring to the marketplace. Look for commonalities among your best customers. Analyze the deals you are closing and gain a deeper understanding of trigger events that open buying windows. Think about how you might be able to relate to your prospect's unique situation and how you can express this through the words you use, tone and inflection of voice, and body language. And before moving forward, answer the most important question, the one question that will keep you from getting shut down on prospecting calls. What would cause your prospect to say, "So what?" to your message? Ask for what you want. The most important element of any prospecting touch is the ask. What you are asking the prospect to do or give up. It really doesn't matter what else you say or do. If you fail to directly ask your prospect to take action, everything else is just academic. The primary reason prospecting gets overcomplicated, companies create long-winded scripts, and salespeople beat around the bush with passive, "Maybe if it would be okay, and if you're not too busy, we could kind of maybe get together for a few minutes, what do you think" statements, is to avoid directly asking, which carries the potential for rejection. Fear is why so many people seek the easy way out and look for shortcuts and silver bullets rather than just biting the bullet and asking for what they want. It's the reason I get so many questions from salespeople that begin with, "What's the trick?" or "Can you tell me the secret?" It's also why so many salespeople are duped into buying into seminars and products that promise to deliver the secret to prospecting, only to find out that there really is no secret. Here's the brutal truth. There is only one technique that really works for getting what you want on a prospecting touch. Ask. That's it. Just ask. Ask for the appointment, ask for information, ask for the decision maker, ask for the next step, ask for the sale. Ask for what you want, ask. The fact is, if you're having a hard time getting appointments, getting to decision makers, getting information, or closing the deal, 9 out of 10 times is because you're not asking. Why? Well, because 9 out of 10 times, you are afraid to hear no. Starting with prospecting and all the way through the close, you must constantly be asking for what you want. Otherwise, your deals will tend to stall and die, or you never get to the door in the first place. There are 3 steps to asking. 1, ask with confidence and assume you will get what you want. 2, shut up. 3, be prepared to deal with reflex responses, brush-offs, and objections. Assume you will get what you want. We've tracked thousands of calls across a diverse set of industries. When salespeople demonstrate confidence and ask assertively for what they want, prospects say yes about 70% of the time. Non-assertive requests have about a 30% success rate. And when you pair an assertive request with a because, the probability of getting a yes goes up even higher. Jeffrey Gittimer, author of The Little Red Book of Selling, says that the assumptive position is the strongest selling strategy in the world. Assuming you'll get what you want begins with your belief system and self-talk. When you tell yourself you're going to win and you keep telling yourself so, it bolsters your internal belief system. Assuming you will get what you want is a mindset of positive expectation that manifests itself in your outward body language, voice inflection and tone, and the words you use. Because an assumptive ask has a higher success rate, you'll get more wins, and with more wins, your confidence grows to greater heights. Whether on the phone, in person, or communicating via email or social, the words you use and how you structure those words send the message loud and clear that you assume you will get a yes or assume you'll get a no. Here are some examples of the difference between passive statements and assumptive statements. Passive, is this a good time? Assumptive, the reason I'm calling is. Passive, I was wondering if. Assumptive, tell me who, how, when, where, what. Passive, I have the whole day open. Assumptive, I'm super busy bringing on new clients, but I do have a slot available at 11 a.m. Passive, what do you think? Assumptive, why don't we go ahead and get that set up? Passive, what's the best time for you? Assumptive, I'll be visiting a client not far from your office on Monday. I can pick you up for lunch. Passive, I kinda sorta was wondering if maybe you have time to answer a few questions, if that would be okay. Assumptive, a lot of my customers are telling me that they're having problems with XYZ. What do you feel is your biggest challenge? Passive, would this be a good time for you? Assumptive, how about we meet at 2 p.m.? With email, social messaging, and text messages, direct assumptive words and sentence structure are the body language of the written word. When you choose weak, passive words, it sends the message that you lack confidence. On the phone and in person, your words and how you deliver those words must match. Your prospect is subconsciously assessing whether your words, voice tone, and body language are congruent. If they are not, your prospect will not trust you and will put up resistance. Most importantly, you must directly, quickly, and concisely get to the point. Asking directly for what you want makes it easy for your prospect to say yes. Voice tone, inflection, and body language. When you are facing the potential of rejection, the fear you feel is real. It is a physiological response that is driven in part by an almond-shaped structure in your brain called the amygdala, which triggers the fight-or-flight mechanism. This part of your brain is designed to keep you alive, but unfortunately, it doesn't distinguish between threats like a rattlesnake coiled and hissing at you or a prospect about to tell you no. To the amygdala, it all looks the same. So it prepares your body and mind to fight or run. begins shutting down non-essential parts of your body to conserve energy, and redirects that energy to your muscles. Essentially, it is preparing you for peak performance so that you stay alive. This is why you feel physically anxious before you ask. Your mind reels, your palms sweat, stomach tightens, and muscles become tense as you subconsciously prepare for no. This is the root cause of your feeling of fear. Getting past the fear of no isn't easy. I've been selling my entire life and have been incredibly successful at it. Yet today, I still have to remind myself that no won't kill me. That, by the way, is the key. You have to teach your rational brain to tell your amygdala or reptilian brain that the threat isn't real. Start by learning to anticipate the anxiety that comes right before asking for what you want. Then practice managing your internal self-talk and outward physical reaction to that fear. Courage, by the way, is just like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the stronger it gets. This awareness helps you manage your body language, voice inflection and tone, and words despite the volcano of emotions that may be erupting below the surface. Like a duck on the water, you appear calm and cool and project a relaxed, confident demeanor on the outside, even though you're paddling frantically just below the surface. Here are some examples of behaviors that demonstrate lack of confidence and behaviors that demonstrate confidence. Lack of confidence, speaking with a high-pitched tone of voice. Confidence, speaking with normal inflection and a deeper pitch. Lack of confidence, speaking really fast. When you speak too fast, you sound untrustworthy. Confidence, speaking at a relaxed pace with appropriate pauses. Lack of confidence, tense or defensive tone of voice. Confidence, friendly tone with a smile in your voice. Lack of confidence, speaking really loud or soft. Confidence, appropriate voice modulation with appropriate emotional emphasis on the right words and phrases. Lack of confidence, frail or nervous tone of voice with too many filler words like ums and uhs and awkward pauses. Confidence, direct, properly placed tone and speech that gets right to the point. Lack of confidence, lack of eye contact, looking away. Nothing says I can't be trusted and I'm not confident like poor eye contact. Confident, direct, appropriate eye contact. Lack of confidence, hands in your pockets. Confidence, hands by your side or out in front of you as you speak. Now, this may feel uncomfortable, but it will make you look powerful and confident. Lack of confidence, wild gesticulations or hand motions. Confidence, using hand gestures in a calm, controlled manner. Lack of confidence, touching your face or putting your fingers in your mouth, which is a clear sign that you are nervous or insecure. Confidence, hands in a power position, by your side or out in front of you in a controlled, non-threatening manner. Lack of confidence, hunched over, head down, arms crossed. Confidence, straight posture, chin up, shoulders straight and back. This posture will actually make you feel more confident. Lack of confidence, shifting back and forth on your feet or rocking your body. Confidence, standing still in a natural power pose. Lack of confidence, stiff posture and body tense. Confidence, relaxed, natural posture. Lack of confidence, jaw clenched, tense look on your face. Confidence, a relaxed smile. The smile is universal language that says, I'm friendly and can be trusted. Lack of confidence. Weak, limp, sweaty palm handshake. Yuck. Confidence. Firm, confident handshake delivered while making direct eye contact. Shut up. The hardest part of asking is learning to ask and shut up. When you've asked for what you want, you've put it all out there and left yourself vulnerable to rejection. And what happens when you feel vulnerable? You try to protect yourself. In that awkward moment after you ask, your head starts spinning and rejection flashes before your eyes. The split second of silence is unbearable. It feels like an eternity. When you fail to manage the disruptive emotions that are triggered by silence, your call turns into a train wreck. Your mouth starts moving. You attempt to overcome objections that have not even surfaced, overexplain yourself, offer your prospect a way out, and start blabbing on and on about features and benefits, your company, your dog, and where you went to school, until the prospect who was ready to say yes gets talked into saying no by you. This is why, despite all of the alarm bells going off in your adrenaline-soaked mind, you must shut up and give your prospect room to answer. Here's why. The faster you get to an answer, the faster you'll be able to move on to the next prospecting touch or deal with a no or maybe. It's governed by a simple rule of thirds. Get to yes fast. About one-third of the time, they're going to say yes just because you asked. Your goal is to get these yeses on the table and avoid talking yourself out of them. This makes you super efficient. They say yes to your request, you get what you want, both of you quickly move on to the next thing on your list. Get to no fast. About one-third of the time, the prospect will say no and mean no. Sometimes, this is a phone hung up on you, a door slam in your face, or a deleted email. Sometimes it's a string of expletives. Most times, it's the prospect giving you a direct and uncertain no. Although it sucks to hear no, it's also a blessing. It allows you to quickly move on to the next call, again making you more efficient. Get to maybe fast. About one-third of the time, the prospect will hesitate, say maybe, negotiate, or give you a false objection just to get you off the phone. This is where the rubber meets the road in prospecting. It's where you have a chance to turn a maybe into a yes with an effective reflex response brush off or objection turnaround. When you are prepared, you know exactly how to handle reflex responses, brush offs, and objections, or RBOs. And you gain the confidence to shut up and manage silence. We're going to dive headfirst into techniques for turning around RBOs in Chapter 16. Chapter 15. Telephone Prospecting Excellence. Mr. Watson, come here. I want to see you. The first intelligible words spoken over the telephone. Alexander Graham Bell. Question. How do you get a salesperson to stop working? Answer. Put a phone in front of him. That's a little joke that elicits nervous laughs at keynotes and seminars. For thousands of salespeople, picking up the phone and calling a prospect is the most stressful part of their life. Many of these reluctant salespeople stare at the phone, secretly hoping that it will disappear. They procrastinate, get ducks in a row, and work to ensure that everything is perfect before they ever dial. Any excuse, and I mean any excuse, to do something else takes priority. They work over their leaders too, whining that no one answers the phone anymore, arguing that it's a waste of time, complaining that people don't like to be contacted by phone, and labeling any outbound call a cold call, even when they're calling back inbound leads, while gravitating towards so-called experts who pontificate that cold calling is dead. Last month, a top five insurance company hired me to deliver a fanatical prospecting boot camp. The executive who brought me in said that the single biggest challenge facing their new agents was prospecting. In his words, we were having such a hard time getting them to just pick up the phone and talk to people. When I arrived on the morning of the training, he pulled me aside and said, "I hope I haven't put you in a bad spot." We didn't spend time discussing the new reality in our industry, but no one answers the phone anymore. I realize you're going to do live phone blocks, but I wouldn't expect too much from them. Now, this is the guy paying me big bucks to teach his agents to prospect effectively on the phone, and on the morning of the training, he is already making excuses for why it won't work. We did 3 live phone blocks that day using targeted lists the agents brought with them. Over the course of the day, we had a whopping 51% contact rate. That's actual live prospects answering their phones. This was not a statistical anomaly. It was generated by 19 agents who made 1,311 outbound dials. At the end of the day, I sat down with my contact and showed him the numbers. He was both thrilled, as in, when can we get you to come back and do this again, thrilled, and bemused. I don't understand how you got those results. Everybody tells me that people don't answer the phones anymore. Who's telling you that, I asked. The agents, he responded. You mean the same people that you say won't make calls? He slowly nodded his head as the weight of this realization sank in. Nobody answers a phone that doesn't ring. The myth that the phone no longer works because nobody answers is disproven daily in our fanatical prospecting boot camps. The myth is disproven by our sales team at SalesGravy and with thousands of sales teams across the globe that survive and thrive on the phone. The statistics don't lie. We see between a 15% and 80% contact rate on the phones depending on the industry, product, and role of the contact. For example, in the business services segment, contact rates are consistently between 25 and 40%. This, by the way, is far higher than response rates with email and light years higher than those of social prospecting. All of our real-world evidence flies directly into the face of the myth that gets repeated over and over again that the phone has a low success rate. And it gets better. We have stats on phone prospecting going back to the early 1990s, and we are seeing clear trends that contact rates via the phone have actually risen by around 5 percentage points. Now, we don't know the exact reason why more prospects are answering their phones, but we suspect three drivers. First, phones are anchored to people, not desks. It's common for prospects to answer their mobile phone when you call them, either because their mobile line is their only line or because their office line rolls over to their mobile line. Next, no one is calling. Because so much sales communication has shifted to email, social inboxes, and text, phones are not ringing nearly as much as in the past. Because of this, salespeople who call are standing out in the crowd and getting through. And finally, prospects are getting burned out on impersonal, irrelevant, and often automated prospecting emails. Email and social inboxes are being flooded with crap, and prospects are hungry for something different, a live, authentic human being. Think about it. If the phone did not work, why are so many telephone prospecting companies springing up across the globe and thriving? Companies are spending tens of thousands of dollars on outsourcers who use the phone to prospect because there is no other viable way to keep the pipe full, and they've allowed their salespeople not to do it. The telephone is, has always been, and will continue to be the most powerful sales prospecting tool. Listen to me. The phone is your most powerful sales tool, period, end of story. Let me say this one more time slowly. There is no other tool in sales that will deliver better results, fill your pipe faster, and help you cover more ground in less time than the phone. So stop looking at it like it's your enemy or an alien being covered in slimy tentacles, and know it's not going to dial itself. Here's the brutal truth. Salespeople who ignore the phone fail. They deliver mediocre results, and they cheat themselves out of hard cash. Tanya, an outside sales rep, wrote me with this question. My manager is always trying to get me to use the phone for prospecting. I'm terrible at the phone, and I've tried to explain to him that I'm much better in person. How can I convince him to let me get on the street and knock on doors? Tanya, like many outside salespeople, when faced with telephone prospecting will say, but I'm way better in person. My answer, of course you're better in person. That's why we hired you to be an outside sales rep. But here's the deal. In sales, time is money, and you can cover far more ground, qualify more opportunities, and set more appointments in a one-hour targeted phone block than in an entire day of driving around your territory randomly, knocking on doors. Think about it this way. How many prospects could you qualify or set appointments with face-to-face in an 8-hour period? Even on the busiest city street, 20 would be a stretch. In most territories, with travel time and parking, it would be closer to 10. If it is hot, raining, snowing, or freezing out, the numbers go down further. How about 1 hour on the phone with a list of targeted prospects? how many phone calls would you make? Averaging 1 to 2 minutes per call, you could make 25 to 50 calls. So if you were touching twice as many prospects in about a tenth of the time in a climate-controlled environment, which do you think will yield better results? The answer is an obvious no-brainer. The phone is the most efficient prospecting tool because when you are organized, you can reach more prospects in a shorter period of time than through any other prospecting channel, even email. Because you have many more things to do in your sales day than prospect, it is in your best interest to use the most efficient method for contacting lots of prospects. And the most efficient, cost-effective method is the telephone. The telephone is also more effective than email, social, and text because when you are actually speaking to another human being, there is a higher probability that you will set appointments, sell stuff, and gather information. Yet many salespeople find it awkward to use the phone for prospecting because they don't know what to say stupid things, or read awkward, cheesy scripts that generate resistance and rejection. They don't have an easy-to-execute telephone prospecting process that actually works. They don't know how to deal with reflex responses, brush-offs, and objections, or they're just afraid of rejection. Nobody likes it. Get over it. While I was working on this book, Dave, a sales rep from North Carolina, hit me up with this question. Jeb, I need your advice. The first call to a prospect proves very difficult for me. I know it's all in my head. I'm like a kid in seventh grade who is calling a girl to go to a school dance and then gets scared when her dad answers the phone. I'm normally very confident, comfortable with product knowledge, and I can close business. But when I'm on the phone with a new prospect, it's a different story. I know that if I can overcome this, my monthly goals will get knocked out quicker than a fixed prize fight. Please help. What I love about this question is it's honest and reflects accurately how many salespeople feel about telephone prospecting. Dave, like most salespeople, heads into the office each morning with every intention of getting on the phone and engaging new prospects. As he reluctantly dials that first number, after wasting an hour piddling around in an effort to avoid the inevitable, his palms sweat, his heart pounds, and he secretly prays that no one will answer. Then the prospect or a gatekeeper answers, and he forgets what to say. He stumbles over his words, stuttering and sputtering, and the prospect quickly brushes him off with, "I'm not interested, we're happy, or I don't have time to talk." He feels rejected and embarrassed, and the motivation for calling evaporates. To avoid making more calls, he shuffles papers and wastes time doing anything but dialing again. So he sends emails, takes a spin on social media, wastes time digging through the CRM, and whines to his manager that he has no time to call because there is so much admin work to do. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Telephone prospecting is the most despised activity in sales. Calling and interrupting people you don't know is uncomfortable, and you get a tremendous amount of rejection. It will always be uncomfortable picking up the phone and calling people you don't know. It's just not a natural thing to do. There will always be calls and even days when you fumble your words and become embarrassed. You will always get more rejection than acceptance, but that's true for every prospecting channel. That's why it's called prospecting, not order taking. Look at it this way. If telephone prospecting were easy, everyone would be in sales and we'd all be making minimum wage and living with our parents. Most salespeople have never been taught how to use the phone. What I find across the board, though, is that most salespeople don't know how to use the phone for prospecting or sales. They've either never been taught or they have a bias towards communicating via email or text. This problem is exacerbated by the fact that at most companies, there is deficient to non-existent telephone prospecting training, both for outside sales and inside sales. When companies do provide telephone prospecting training, it's usually complex, contrived BS developed by people who've never even used the phone successfully for prospecting. This crap never works in the real world with real prospects, giving salespeople another excuse for avoiding the phone. Then there are the companies and sales organizations that task the marketing department, or even worse, the HR department, with developing phone scripts for the sales team and training salespeople to deliver the scripts. The marketing people who develop these scripts have never had to interrupt the day of a prospect on a live call, and most would rather slit their wrist than actually make one. Some of the stuff I find sales teams using leaves my head spinning. Just this month, while at a conference, I ran into an HR manager who had been tasked with building the sales prospecting training for the company's sales organization. I asked her if she had ever made a prospecting call or conducted a sales call. She responded, no. Well, if you've never sold anything, how will you be able to build a sales training curriculum? I asked. She responded that she built the new hire orientation curriculum and her boss liked that, so they wanted her to take a shot at the sales training program. But I don't understand how you can teach people how to sell if you don't know how to sell. Her response? Well, I've had people try to sell things to me, and I know what I don't like, so I'm going to start there. I'm just curious, I asked. How do you feel about telephone prospecting? Her response was emphatic. I could never do that. My prediction for a sales training program? Is more crap created by a person who has no understanding or appreciation of the sales profession. Finally, there are throngs of sales leaders who have no clue how to coach their people to develop and master phone prospecting skills. They know that the pipeline is more robust and performance improves when their people are actively and consistently prospecting by phone. They just don't know how to lead their people down that road. My goal with this chapter is to set things straight and give you the tools to leverage the phone to drive qualified deals into your pipe and crush your numbers and competitors. You'll start by learning how to leverage the telephone to maximize your sales day. I'm going to teach you how to double or even quadruple the number of dials you make in a much shorter period of time so that you can get your phone block knocked out and move on to the other things in sales that are far more enjoyable. Then, I'm going to teach you what to do and what to say when you get prospects on the phone. You'll learn how to reduce resistance, increase the probability that you will achieve your defined objective, and mitigate rejection. Finally, in the next chapter, you will learn how to effectively deal with and get past reflex responses, brush-offs, and objections to more effectively set appointments, gather information, qualify, and move directly into sales conversations. Before moving on, though, let's stipulate a few things. First, you are going to get rejected a lot on the phone because statistically, you will generate more real-time interactions with prospects than through any other prospecting channel. Next, most of your calls will go to voicemail. Depending on your industry, prospect base, and targeted list, you'll connect with between 20 and 50% of your prospects on average during phone blocks. This is why you must be effective when you do get a prospect on the line. Next, most of the reason that you are frustrated with the phone and find making telephone prospecting calls abhorrent is because you or the people who taught you how to prospect are overcomplicating the living stew out of a very simple, straightforward process. And finally, nobody really likes telephone prospecting. No matter what I teach you, you're probably still going to hate the phone. But that does not negate the fact that to reach peak sales performance, you must master telephone prospecting. If you want to earn big bucks and stand tall on top of your team's ranking report, you've got to accept that telephone prospecting sucks and get over it. The ultimate key to success is the scheduled phone block. Fanatical prospectors set up daily phone blocks of 1 to 2 hours. During this time, they remove all distractions. They shut off email and mobile devices, and they let those around them know that they are not to be disturbed. They set clear goals for how many calls they will make. This call block is a booked appointment on their schedule, and it is sacred. Nothing interferes. Some people choose to break call blocks into small, manageable chunks and set goals for those chunks. It's much easier to set a goal to make 10 calls than 100, or to dial for 30 minutes rather than 2 hours. It's much easier to overcome your initial fears and trepidations a few calls at a time. you can wrap your mind around these small chunks. Some people set an overall goal for each daily phone block. For example, they will decide in advance to make 50 dials. Next, they'll set smaller 10-dial blocks. Then they'll pump themselves up for these small blocks. When they finish, they give themselves a small reward and move on to the next 10 calls.